This is a rain replay from 2005.
We'll celebrate another rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. This is the rain report. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. It is highly unlikely you will have received a piece of Collins equipment for Christmas. Those new to amateur radio may not realize that for almost half a century, Collins radios were the cream of the crop in ham radio circles. Collins transmitters, receivers, and transceivers have become pricey collectibles. While Collins gear was considered the Cadillac of ham gear for decades, the restoration of these collectible ham rigs has its challenges. Just ask Bill Carnes, N7OTQ, a former board member of the Collins Collectors Association and longtime Collins collector and restorer in Chandler, Arizona.
Well, one of the challenges with the Collins gear, of course, is the wrinkle paint that they used. Very highly developed, very tightly controlled, and very personally controlled, unfortunately. They had one painter, basically, in Cedar Rapids that did the wrinkle painting, and it was a high-temperature process done by one man. Eventually, they had to expand, but it was basically a one-man operation even late into the equipment's history. The crinkle paint, fortunately, it's a very high-quality, very stable paint, but when it's been damaged, it's not an easy crinkle to reproduce. Some people have resorted to completely stripping it and using a pretty similar powder coat crinkle. The problem you get into there is color duplication. You can overcoat that powder coat crinkle and get closer on the color, but you see a lot of quote-unquote restored Collins gear that's been powder coated, and the black is not correct. It's not the original St. James gray color. And of course, then everything has to be rescreened. There are some people that do that pretty well. I personally don't like to do that and have never powder coated a piece of equipment or had that done. I've had great luck repairing the crinkle by doing a lot of hand work and using a Harley-Davidson engine crinkle. It comes in a spray can. When you're using it with a brush or hand working it in, you have to spray it into a dish. But under the right temperature conditions, which you have to experiment with, you can pretty closely duplicate that crinkle and put it into scratches, for instance, or into a more substantial area by dodging it in. Then once you get that, what's a pretty black crinkle redeveloped on the metal, you go back and put a color coat over that very carefully that doesn't destroy the wrinkle. I've been pretty successful with that, but the wrinkle is probably the biggest challenge.
What about inside the box?
Well, one of the challenges is always finding original parts. Collins used very high-quality parts, and in my mind, a restoration is not a restoration unless it uses original parts, except where you have to compromise to replace, for instance, Black Beauty capacitors. You certainly wouldn't want to go out and find an original new old stock Black Beauty capacitor and put it in there. I have to admit I'm kind of a purist and I have done that, but you wouldn't want to do it in volume. And when you cap a receiver or transmitter, you have to resort to using the newer technology capacitors, which in my mind I think is a very good compromise. So one of the challenges for electrical restoration is finding parts. Beyond that, Collins equipment in general is so easy to work on that if you're a good technician, they're really very fulfilling to restore. And I don't view them as being difficult to restore. It's a matter of developing your talents and doing it carefully.
How collectible is Collins solid state equipment?
Well, I think for those that are interested in the entire line, they're very collectible. I tend to be a tube person. I spent a lot of my technical part of my career working in the semiconductor industry, so I run like hell from that as a hobby. I don't have a lot of solid-state gear. I have a KWM 380 that I like to use because of the history. It's not the world's best transceiver until you do a lot of replacing of the switching diodes, the steering diodes that are in it with the new Schottky diodes, but it did suffer from intermod. But they're collectible. I have some HF80 gear that's all solid state that I dearly love. Other than that, I tend to stay away from it, but there are other collectors that collect it full tilt and really enjoy it. And the gear can be quite fulfilling in terms of buying, restoring, and selling if that's the kind of thing that you like to do. Some people do that. I'm not too good at the selling part.
The KWM 380, I recall as being really the only solid-state ham transceiver Collins sold.
From their amateur radio line, I believe that's true. And it was pretty innovative for the time, but as the years have gone on, the technical performance, for instance, of the tube gear, the transceivers that they made, they'll hold their own, other than feature sets, they'll hold their own against current solid-state, the best of the current solid-state gear. The KWM 380, as I mentioned a minute ago, in some areas, for instance, in terms of sensitivity, they'll hold their own with the best of them. In fact, I was working on a KWM 380 for a friend the other day and measured the minimum detectable signal, and it was minus 138 dBm, which is remarkable, a very, very sensitive receiver. But they do suffer from intermod. They have some other quirks that some people object to. I personally love to use mine. I have not, because of my purism, I have not gone in and done other than the Collins service bulletins. I have not replaced the original steering diodes, band switching diodes, etc., with the new Schottky diodes. If you do that, the intermod becomes quite good. It's a good transceiver. If you want to use something that's nice Collins gear, it's certainly nice to use.
You're listening to Hap Holly, KC9RP's interview with Bill Carnes, N7OTQ, a longtime collector and restorer of Collins radio gear. We'll be right back. This is the Rain Report.
How available are the tubes for the old Collins gear?
Still pretty available. There are several people around the country individually that sell volumes of new old stock tubes. Frank Christ, I believe he's in Florida. The best resource is Antique Electronics, which fortunately is right here about 2 miles down the street. And they have a huge inventory of new old stock tubes that make the tubes in general not the biggest problem. You can usually get the tubes you need. Unfortunately, audio tube gear has gone through a kind of a resurrection and resurgence. The audiophiles are driving up the prices of some of them, what used to be more common tubes. So some of the prices are starting to rise. In my mind, they're still not obnoxious. I mean, when you've got a piece of gear that's worth $1,000 and you lose a tube and you only have to buy one of them, to me, it's not too big a shock to pay $12 instead of what it was 3 years ago, which was $2. I don't view that as a problem. That's kind of a one-time event, you hope, and you don't have to suffer it too often. In general, tubes are not really a big problem. A bigger problem is electrolytic capacitors. If you are at all interested in retaining form, fit, and function, some of the electrolytics, which have a known failure rate and they just don't last forever, they're getting pretty hard to find because the trend in modern electronics gear has been to lower and lower voltages where the tube gear ran on 2, 3, 4, 5 thousand volts, and people were making 300 volt and 500 volt and 1,000 volt electrolytic capacitors. Now the modern equipment runs on going down to 1.5 volts. All of the capacitor manufacturers now make 3-volt capacitors and 10-volt capacitors and 15-volt capacitors, which don't help really a lot when you're trying to repair a piece of Collins gear. Fortunately, Antique Electronics also saw that coming and was under a lot of pressure when their new old stock of capacitors, even new old stock is questionable in capacitors, but they had some new old stock that ran out. They bought a capacitor manufacturing line from a major electrolytic capacitor manufacturer, and they are making electrolytics now in their factory here in Tempe, Arizona. There is at least a resource starting to appear. My experience is there are just some wonderful people in the collecting business. I enjoy the people aspects of it certainly as much as I do the equipment.
Did Collins manufacture any VHF gear for the ham market?
They did, to a limited degree, expressly for the ham market. They did make an S-line model called the 62S1. It was a transferter, translator, receiver, translator, and transmitter, translator, that covered 6 and 2 meters. It's a really excellent piece of equipment. It was part of the amateur radio line. It was developed late in the history of the line, and it was actually built by the avionics because the amateur radio people did not have as much experience at VHF. It was built by the avionics people. And if you look inside a 62S1, from the outside, it looks like a piece of S-line gear. From the inside, when you open it, you immediately see something different than you're used to looking at in the quality S-line gear. It's just built differently. So it was really almost a piece of avionics gear, which Collins, as I'm sure you know, went on to become a major player in the commercial avionics business. Now, that being said, that was really the only piece of amateur gear that they built, as far as I know. They did, though, build a considerable amount of ground control VHF commercial gear, but particularly their VHF aircraft gear that covers 108 to 152, I think. That skipped through the 2-meter amateur band. Their UHF gear hits the 220 band. So there is a lot of surplus gear that was technically ground control or even avionics. I have a very nice 2-meter AM setup here that I love to use in our 2-meter AM net that's really two aircraft radios mounted in a power supply box that Collins built to allow those two airline boxes, a transmitter and a receiver, to be used in a ground control position. So there's even some airborne avionics, but there's for sure a lot of ground avionics that can be used on 2-meter AM, for instance. So the answer to the question is kind of twofold. No, they didn't make very much quote-unquote amateur gear for VHF, but they did make a lot of gear that you can use on 2 meters particularly.
That concludes Hap Holly KC9RP's interview with Bill Carnes and 7OTQ, a Chandler, Arizona ham who had collected and restored Collins radio gear for almost 2 decades. Bill is also a former board member of the Collins Collectors Association. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2005 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.